Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk a little bit about the economy of life today. Found myself quoting Bug's Life to somebody on the internet who is discussing some of these things, like the economy that you live in, wherever you live. You can live almost anywhere in the world, and you have elements of capitalism in your society. Because what capitalism really is, not what people are calling capitalism, but what it's defined as, is that the means of production are in the possession of the individual. When God said, dress it and keep it, he was talking to an individual, a man. Dress it and keep it. That means to take the natural resources and dress them, manage them, take care of them, keep them, protect them. This is what capitalism allows the individual to do. Now, the individual might not do it, so therefore, capitalism in itself, even though it is a moral economic structure, doesn't guarantee morality. Morality is a choice. What capitalism guarantees by the nature of the definition of capitalism, which means the means of production is in the hands of the individual, is that the individual has the right to make the moral choice. In socialism, the individual does not have the right to make the moral choice as to who gets what. That is decided by the collective, either through electing some, since they're not going to vote on every meal and who gets what, they're going to give somebody the power to divide the products of the labor of the community. That individual is going to have a position of power. You have to have someone in a position of power in order to effectively operate socialism. Socialism requires that. So when you create a socialist state, you create offices of power, because somebody's going to have the right to decide the distribution of wealth. Where did that right come from? It was originally in the hands of the individual. In capitalism, it's in the hands of the individual. The individual has the right to decide what he does with the means of production. What's the primary means of production in nature? You, your labor, what you do. I mean, if you extract gold from the ground, you dig out a bunch of dirt, and you wash away the dirt, and you're left with, you know, heavier items. You know, you pan the gold out because it's heavier, so it goes to, you know, you wash away the dirt, and then you see the gold flake, and you pick it up, and you put it in your little leather pouch. You have now collected with your labor a piece of dirt. That dirt you call gold. It has a specific gravity and weight, and it operates. And you can mold it and shape it into something of use. You have exploited the earth. And that's one of the things that I pointed out in the conversation, because people say that capitalism exploits things, as if exploiting things is a bad deal. But what is to exploit? To exploit something actually simply means to make full use of and derive a benefit from a resource. So if I were to exploit you, would that be a bad thing, or would that be a good thing? I would make full use of you. Say you were really good at fixing cars, and I needed my car fixed. And I said, you know, if you fix my car, I'll pay you $100. I have exploited you as a natural resource. But that isn't a bad thing, because you get $100 and I get my car fixed. You might charge me $200. You say, well, no, I'll do it for $200 because this is a big job. And I say, okay, I have exploited you. But that isn't a bad thing. You walk away with $200 and my car works. That's a good thing. We're both happy. You got $200 and I got my car fixed. But that was exploitation by definition. Making the full use of and deriving a benefit from. We both benefited. We both made use of what we had. I had a car. You had the ability to fix it. That's exploitation. Did you know that? See, if I say the word exploitation, you think I've abused you. But that's a mindset. That isn't the definition of the word. That is an implication that you have applied by a previously existing prejudice that you have in your mind. If I say capitalism, because you have seen ugly capitalists, selfish capitalists, you think capitalism is bad. Because you've watched memes on Facebook saying that Denmark is the happiest nation in the world, you think socialism is a good thing because they tell you that Denmark is socialist. Actually, the president of Denmark says they're not socialist. They call themselves something in between. They have socialist tendencies in their economy and in their government, but they also have capitalist tendencies in their government. People get to keep what they earn. They don't get to keep all of it. They're taxed by maybe 50% of what they earn. They can be taxed a lot more. I mean, if they want to buy a car, I think it's 150% tax on a car. Actually, maybe even more than that. I can't remember now. It's phenomenal. I mean, like a $20,000 car here in the United States, I think would cost over $150,000. So yeah, I guess it's more than 150%. But anyway, the point is that they're heavily, heavily taxed. So it's not really capitalism because they do not, if you're in a 50% tax bracket, 20% tax bracket, 10% tax bracket, that's not capitalism. Because you only own, if you were in a 10% tax bracket, you only own 90% of the means of production, the primary means of production, your labor. 10% of your labor you do not own, and somebody will take that away from you. If you are 50% of your wages are taken from you, then you only have 50% capitalism. And the reality is a lot more than 50% is taken away from most people, including the people in Denmark, who are not the happiest people. They consume more depressants than almost anybody else. They have a great deal of suicides in their society. So doesn't sound that happy to me. And droves of people have left Denmark and taken their businesses with them because of the fact of the heavy taxation. So these memes, education by mem is not a reality. It is brainwashing you, and I see so much of that on the internet. It's just ridiculous. But it's very hard to get people to realize what these things really are doing and what it's really all about, because they are so brainwashed, and because many people, if not most people, are amoral. They are lacking morals, and that's why socialism is attractive to many people, because they are actually amoral. They have no morals, or at least have very little morals as along certain lines, and they can't see it because they've been brainwashed. So anyway, I had this discussion with a number of people, and one fellow named Malik, he says, this might sound harsh, but this is reality. We, the capitalists, do not love our workers, nor are we required to. Well, you can't say that isn't necessarily so. A capitalist may love his workers, but he is absolutely right that in order to be a capitalist, you are not required to love your workers. You might not love your workers. The choice remains with you, because your workers are your resources. and you're exploiting your workers. And again, remember, exploitation doesn't mean abuse. It means make use of. If a guy is sitting around and idle, doing nothing with his skill, he is unemployed. He can fix cars, but he doesn't have a car to fix. He doesn't own a car himself. But he can go work for somebody else who owns a car, owns the means of you know, all that metal that was extracted from the ground and molded into a shape of a car. He owns a car, but he needs somebody to fix it. And so therefore, now the person with the talent to fix it is employed in the operation of fixing the car. He will be rewarded according to compensated for his time and energy. So he's going to take his means of production, his skill, and turn it into something of value for him. And in the same course of events, the person who owns the car is going to get a car that works rather than a car. You know, a car that doesn't work is a giant anchor. It's a barricade. It's an obstacle to the lawnmower. But when it works, it's now an asset. He can now use it. And now, with the $200 that the mechanic earned fixing the car, he can go out and turn that into something else. He can buy food. He can pay rent. He can buy more tools and get more jobs fixing more cars. Both individuals profited. Both individuals exploited one another. They used the resources of one another. The skill of the mechanic and the automobile of the capitalist. And they were both capitalists. And they both enhanced their position. They've dressed it and kept it. There is no zero-point energy here. There is no point where, you know, now you've only had a limited number of resources. You've actually expanded your resources. You've turned a pile of metal, junk, into an operating machine. Maybe he fixed the guy's backhoe, and now the guy can go out and make ditches to irrigate ground that where you had some areas turning into swamp and some areas dry and barren, and now he's going to divide that up so that some areas are now getting water that didn't get water before, and he can grow more trees, more grass, more wildlife, more birds, more deer, more antelope, more sheep, whatever, because he's taken that water and spread it out in a more efficient pattern. Because nature's going to simply carve out a Grand Canyon, which maybe looks great, but doesn't really produce a lot. If you went down the Grand Canyon, if you did not eat snakes, you would probably starve to death. Because there's not a lot down there to eat. There are a few deer around, but not a lot. But there's a huge amount of water zooming through there, but it doesn't grow much because it's all channeled down through the bottom. If you spread that water out, which they eventually do when it comes out, you could grow all kinds of things and feed thousands and thousands of people and wildlife and make beautiful gardens, etc. Because you took that water and you exploited it. You used it as a means of production and produced more, not less. You didn't take away from one group, you know, and starve the poor rocks. Now we're not going to get a bigger Grand Canyon because you took some of the water away. No, you're going to actually get more. You're going to increase. You're going to create something where there was little before. And that's what capitalism allows you to do. Now, it doesn't guarantee that you do this. But anyway, he goes on to ask in his question, we are the capitalists, do not love our workers, nor are we required to, when he should have probably just said, we are not required to love our workers in order to be capitalists. We are only required to put them into productive use and ensure liability. I'm not sure what he means by liability. Sorry, but not sorry. I'm not sure, you know, what do you mean by liability? If if the individual employed in the fixing of my car bangs his knuckle because the wrench slips, am I responsible for getting him a Band-Aid? No, he's a private contractor and he is responsible for himself. So I have no liability if he busts his knuckle. He said he could fix the car. Didn't say I had to be his Social Security. So I'm not sure what liability. What liability I do have is that in fixing my car, I'm not allowed to interfere with anybody else's property rights. If he accidentally leaves a tool next to my radiator and I open up, I actually had a guy work on my car once and I thought I knew he had somebody who works for him buttoning up the job. And so I crawled underneath. I think he was putting in a starter or something. I don't know what he was doing, but anyway. So I crawled underneath the car to see what he had done, to see if he'd done it right, because I didn't trust the guy who worked for him. And there I found two wrenches still stuck on the nuts, you know. They were still just hanging there under the car on the nuts, on the bolts where he had tightened them up. And he'd left the wrenches hanging there. I don't get to keep those wrenches. I got to take them in to the owner and said these wrenches were still hanging. And he just rolled his eyes. But I had a liability that I had to return his wrenches because that was not a part of the deal. So there is some sort of liability, but the liability is only not to infringe upon the contract and the individual property of the individuals that you're dealing with and other individuals who may not even be a part of this. I can't get in the car and go out and run over people. So I have a liability there. But that's as far as that goes. He goes on to say, before some ignoramus brings up exploitation and muwages, the slavery bear in mind that without the investment of the owner, the worker would be unemployed. He would not be making use of his own natural resources. Therefore, the owner deserves the potential return on their investment. There is, in reality, no exploitation going on, just a return on the investment. Gradual profit and further investment are expanding or improving the machinery. Now, he uses the word exploitation, saying no exploitation is going on. And I know what he means because of the fact I know most people think exploitation is a bad thing. But the definition of exploitation does not say to abuse. It just simply makes the use of somebody for profit. And he certainly did that. There was exploitation going on. There's exploitation going on all the time. But it doesn't mean abuse. It may mean to mutual advantage. They exploited each other. So we have to be careful how we use these words. Because, that definition I gave you, that's just the definition. That's the most common definition of the word exploit. But in your mind, you think exploit is a bad thing. It's not. Necessarily, it may be. You think in your mind capitalism is a bad thing. But capitalism is not. Just because somebody does something bad who is misusing capitalism doesn't make capitalism a bad thing. And I'll show you an example. I wrote to them, capitalism does not guarantee morality. It's not in the definition that it guarantees morality or good intentions or any of that. I said capitalism does not guarantee morality. It is an economic system that leaves the choice of morality, of generosity, in the hands of the individual, along with the means of production. The mechanic could fix his car so it runs and say, you know, while I was under there, I saw that your starter was loose, and I tightened it up. That wasn't part of the deal. He just did it when he was down there. And the capitalist could say, yo, man, my car is running so good. You know, if you need to borrow a car, let me know, and maybe you can borrow this car. And here's the $200. Generosity is a choice. It's not a requirement. And there are capitalists all the time who do that. They give people free meals at the place of work. Not a part of the wages, but they just choose to do so. We're going to be back and explore this and government next on Keys to the Kingdom. Well, welcome back to Keys to the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and I said we were talking about capitalism, and we're going to talk a little bit about government as well. People don't understand capitalism. They think because of the fact that they see somebody who is a capitalist doing bad things, that capitalism is therefore a bad thing. And to show you how stupid that is, I wrote and show these individuals discussing this. Capitalism does not guarantee morality, I said. It is an economic system that leaves the choice of morality and generosity in the hands of the individual, along with the means of production. To suggest or say that capitalism is bad because a capitalist chooses to be immoral or selfish or overly greedy is a potato. Now, that's a term used on the internet. A potato is a, you know, something is round, and a potato is round, therefore, because it's round, it's a potato. You know, it's a invalid argument. It's a misapplication. And so, to give you an example of how we see this being done every day by the mindless majority, it is like saying that guns are bad because someone misuses a gun. The fact that somebody misuses a baseball bat doesn't mean that we get to outlaw baseball. You know, if somebody hits somebody over the head with a baseball bat, oh, we must outlaw baseball. Anybody caught playing baseball should be arrested because somebody somewhere hit somebody in the head with a baseball bat. That's a potato. That is just, it's a non-argument. It is delusional, and it is very common. That kind of thinking is very common today because people do not really think. They don't really have to put ideas together. And one of the reasons this is pervasive in society is you do not have to be responsible for all of your actions. You are not a capitalist. You are not in possession of the means of production yourself. So, can we see other examples of this in society and how this comes about? I was talking with two contractors the other day, and we happened to eat a meal together. Somebody was going to feed contractors next door, and me, who was fixing an old lady's door, So we all ate together, and I just immediately started talking in reference to conservative ideas and assumed that they were in agreement. And they joked about the fact that they pretended to be liberals and leftists almost, and totally against guns and hunting and everything, you know. And I knew he was shining me on, even though we had never had a conversation before. And I looked up, leaned over towards him as he was saying that, oh, they don't believe in any kind of killing or guns. They think they're all bad and all that stuff. And I leaned over to him and I very straight-faced said, you're not even a good liar. Everybody broke out laughing because these are working men. They had worked with their hands all their life. They had constructed and made things. They are naturally going to be conservative. Now, this isn't necessarily always the case, but they have a tendency to it be very common. I've had this conversation with a number of people, and they said, well, of course, because we work for a living. I mean, they work with their hands. They make ends meet because they're the only ones they rely on to make ends meet. And they don't, and it's very fascinating how when you start doing things like public school and public education and somebody take care of my parents, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, when you start doing that as a whole society, it shifts the consciousness of society. They begin to not see the potato argument. They can't connect the dots because they're not responsible for all the dots. Somebody else is responsible for the dots. You know, somebody else is responsible that I get educated. Somebody else is responsible that my parents are taken care of. Somebody else is responsible for the criminal down the street who's robbing my neighbor. I'm not responsible. I don't want to get involved. And this makes your mind susceptible to the potato arguments of the world, where you don't see the big picture. Why? Because you chose not to see your responsibility to your neighbor down the street who was being robbed. You didn't want to volunteer to help your neighbor. Right now there's a project going on in a local community to help somebody sheetrock their house. They've started building a house by themselves, building it from scratch by themselves. They can't hire the labor. They can barely pay for the materials. It's a cabin, but it's an adequate structure, and they're building this house so that they could take care of their grandson, who is disabled. And so they were able to buy a lot, and they were able to buy the materials, and they've been working at this for several years now. And one of their grandchildren just died, and they got a lot of drama in their family. And so the local community wants to help that individual out because that individual also volunteers to help out a lot of people in the community, as well as build their own house and hang their own sheetrock. And they've been doing it, but it's a big job for an old lady. So they're all volunteering to go down there and do it. And so I went down to see if they had enough stuff, and they didn't have enough stuff, and they didn't have some of the right stuff that they needed. And so the local community volunteered to buy some of the stuff that they need to finish the house. It wasn't a lot, but, and somebody else donated a stove because they didn't have a stove to heat the place. So it's getting done, supposedly, will get done, or at least huge chunks of the labor will be done in our own network. We did this. We're helping somebody rebuild after a fire. And that job is still not entirely completed. I think we could have been more efficient about the way we went about doing it. But still, the expenditure of the effort for other people was a choice that people made that does not go unnoticed in the universe by God. But anyway, let's go back to this. Exploitation of man is a choice in capitalism. But exploitation itself is not built or not assumed to be a bad thing. Anyway, the socialism, as an example, abusive exploitation is built into socialism, which centralizes the power in the hands of the leaders who will make decisions that used to be in the hands of the individual. See, rights originate in individuals. Governments are not created by God. Rights are created by God. God gives you the right to dress it and keep it, which is also a responsibility to dress it and keep it. But when you give that responsibility to others, to leaders, to rulers, you no longer have that responsibility, at least you think you don't, and you have put it into the hands of someone else, like Saul. Fix it, Saul. We could fix it, but it's too much trouble, so you fix it, Saul. And it creates what I call the Saul syndrome. And if you're in the network, you got an email, hopefully just before the program, and it has, you know, a few of these things that I wrote in there, and a link to the Saul syndrome article, so you can go look it up, as well as a link to capitalism, as well as a link to socialism. And you need to go and read these things so that you can understand what these things are and how they relate to seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. But you still will not learn what these things are trying to tell you, what these articles are trying to tell you, unless you implement these policies of righteousness in your own life. You have to become a network of people, not just a congregation, but a network of congregations that care about their neighbor, near and far, as much as they care about themselves, care about their neighbor's rights, care about their neighbor's family, care about their neighbor's livelihood. That care must be born again. What do they do at the at that grove in California, that Bohemian Grove? They have this little ceremony out there, and they kill care. They kill care. And see, that's with socialism. You don't have to worry about making the ends meet in socialism, because the common purse is going to supply what you don't produce. So you can kill care. You don't have to care, because the common purse will bail everybody out. You kill care, you kill your soul. You have to care. You have to practice caring about others. So in this little project in this local town, of people actually going out and helping somebody else, that's important. They're caring. Now, they need to care wisely. They need to care where, you know, what was they have these programs that actually Jimmy Carter kind of promoted it. I don't know that he started it, where they would build houses for underprivileged people, poor people. But they required that the poor people work on the house. They actually had to help build the house. They had to show up, pound nails, carry boards, turn screws, and help build the house. And the time they put into building the house was considered sweat equity. And they found that when they did that, the people cared about the house more. When they went into South Africa and they were going to make this model village and help all these poor people out, they were living in a shanty town, they came in and they built all these little dome structures with houses and running water to the houses. And, you know, they didn't have, it wasn't real fancy, but it was way better than the slums they had before. And they built them, and it just looked absolutely beautiful when they built it. And then they invited all the poor people to come live in these shelters. And within 6 months to a year, place looked like shanty town. Doors were ripped off, plumbing was wrecked, filth in the streets, because they didn't give life to care. They didn't teach the people to care. They just gave them stuff. They didn't care. Give me more stuff. I mean, that's what happens to rich kids. Their parents give them and give them and give them. They grow up to be spoiled rich kids. Now, I didn't guarantee that you're going to have moral kids if you, you know, make them work for their allowance. I mean, we don't even give our kids an allowance. They're expected to work. We're expected to work. I get up. They get up. They make a habit of getting up and getting to work. I don't have to yell at them. You know, I can make it uncomfortable for them if they don't do their work. But all my kids were home-taught, which is another thing I brought up in the course of this, because one individual who actually seems to be a kid himself was saying, well, we need a good public education system because people need an education in order to accomplish that. Well, if you need a good education, why do you have a public school education? Because you don't get a good education in a public school. You get a poor education in a public school. Homeschoolers, even when you count the parents who believe in unschooling, which I don't believe in, who have no curriculum, don't try to force their children to learn anything, don't require that their children learn anything. Unschoolers are mixed in with homeschoolers, you know, people who teach their children at home. And even with those people mixed in, homeschoolers still score 30% higher than kids who go to public school. And many homeschooling parents have no college education. Many homeschool. I know some homeschooling parents who could barely speak English. But their kids could all speak English, and their kids all were successful. My kids have all been successful, and they were homeschooled. and I don't have a college degree. How is that possible? I mean, my daughter, who owns three businesses, very successful, is having her first experience in school. She was asked to teach at the local university. So her first experience in a classroom is as a teacher. And one of my sons, same experience. First experience in a classroom, he was a teacher at a local high school. Volunteer teacher, but still a teacher, had a class. Did it for free. Why would he do it for free? Because he's a capitalist. Doesn't mean a capitalist can't be charitable. A socialist doesn't have to be charitable. You know, somebody said once, socialism is the religion you get when you have no religion. Most people don't understand that, because not only do they not understand definition of words like socialism and capitalism, they also don't understand words like religion or government. Religion is the performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. And so socialism says your duty to your fellow man is you go to work, we take a portion of what you produce and we give it to you, the ones who are not working. Assumedly because they can't work, but then again, how many people can't work because they choose not to work? It's like the puppy dog. It was all fat and lazy. Didn't do anything. It seemed to be listless and unhealthy. And left the owner left it with the vet for 3 days and came back, and the dog's all jumping around and happy and leaping up and down and bouncing around, just full of energy. And she wanted to know what wonder drug the vet gave the dog. I didn't give him anything. He says, well, how could he get this so peppy and so excited to see me if you didn't give him a special medicine? He says, no, you don't understand. I didn't give him anything. I didn't feed him. I didn't feed him for 3 days. And guess what happened? The dog got better. He fasted for 3 days and he got more energetic because he was anxious to get fed again. It's amazing how many people can get to work, get clever when they have to. If you take no pain, no gain, if you take away the need to connect the dots, people will stop connecting the dots. And connecting the dots, in order to do that, you need to get the big picture. And socialism, which public school is socialism, takes away the need to get the big picture. You don't have to educate your kids. I have read hundreds and hundreds of school books while I prepared myself to teach my children at home. I did it because I was checking out what's in this school book. Is this one good? Is this one good? This one good? I read more school books preparing to teach my children at home than I did when I was in school, because I didn't read all my school books in school. I was kind of a rebel. But I had a responsibility to my family, and I practiced that responsibility. Again, that's why you need to form a network of congregations who care about one another. You need to help people out because you need to help people out, not because the people need help. You need to give life to care while the guys who go and meet at the Bohemian Grove are killing care. You need to care. Now, handing $10 out your car window to a bum on the street is not caring. It's better than doing nothing, maybe. Probably not much better. If you think that's care, no, that's not. That's just caring about yourself because you want to feel good about giving the 10 bucks. And you imagine that the 10 bucks was exploiting your resources for good. What you were simply doing is trying to obtain a good feeling. You did not check and see if that guy really needed the 10 bucks. You did not investigate what he really needed. You didn't take the time. It's a poor excuse for caring. And that's another reason why you need to form a network. Because, I mean, one of the first things we saw when we formed a network is somebody who was joining all kinds of groups all over the country. And he was in the habit of going to one household after another, claiming to going to help them out, and actually sponged off of them for long periods of time. And he had secret money coming in, a check coming in, because of, I don't know, disability or something. I've seen guys who come and, you know, sob story, and somebody gives him a place to stay, and they feed him. He does a little bit of work around there, but he can't do much because he has to go out and look for a job. He goes out every day to look for a job. He doesn't look for a job. He panhandles. Comes back with hundreds and hundreds of dollars in his pocket. And said, oh, I couldn't find a job. He's not looking for a job. He's got a place to live. They feed him. And he goes out and he panhandles during the day. Makes hundreds and hundreds of dollars. He's sitting there counting all his monies. And he says he's broke. They're not doing him any good. They're not caring for what that guy really needs. Capitalism allows you to care. It doesn't make you care. Because charity is a choice. Without choice, there is no charity. There is no charity in socialism. As a matter of fact, socialism kills charity. Kills that lifeblood of care. It debilitates society. It breaks down the bonds of society that makes society a band of brothers, that makes society strong. Socialism has a track record of creating dictators because it requires offices of power, and power corrupts. You create offices of power, men who seek power will seek office. The kingdom of God has offices too. It has ministers who belong to God, serve God. They're not of the world, but they are men of service. And they know one of the greatest services they can provide for you is to help you provide for others, to give birth to care. If you want to raise somebody from the dead, first, they have to want to care about others. This is what believing in Jesus. Do you believe in loving your neighbor as yourself? Do you believe in forgiving? Good, because if you don't, you will not be forgiven. You can tell me you believe in Jesus till the cows come home, you're not forgiven. Because if you do not forgive, neither will my Father forgive you. Jesus said that. That's the doctrines of Jesus. If somebody tells you that you're forgiven because you believe in Jesus, if somebody tells you you're forgiven because you got dunked in water, they are deceiving you. They are lying to you. If you do not forgive, neither will you be forgiven. Giving to somebody who sometimes does not deserve it is part of the program. Sometimes. Occasionally, Jesus gave to somebody because he knew that that person would eventually deserve it. Not deserve it, but, you know, would learn to believe. Most of the time, he said, do you believe before? You know, when he cured the young boy, he didn't ask the boy, do you believe? He asked the boy's father. Because the father believed, but needed help with his unbelief, which is to even make that statement is a statement of humility, then Jesus cured his son, healed his son. The blind man he healed, and he never even asked him. He says, I come to give sight. But he knew deep down, spiritually, he knew this guy would repent and change the way he looked at things. So anyway, in this next half, we're going to talk about government and what the word government really means. We may come back and revisit some of this, but stay tuned to Keys of the Kingdom.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net. Thank you.